Hello and welcome everybody to Flickr Effect. I'm Dave Lotz. Joining me this week is Bobby Jackson.
Hello, how's it going?
Good. And Michelle Hillard is also here. How's it going, Michelle?
Hello, everyone. Hi, guys.
We're recording this, by the way, on Monday, March 11th, 2024, the day after the Oscars. So, guess what we're going to talk about a little bit tonight, among other things, I'm sure. But we'll probably start off with talking about last night's Oscars, which Michelle and I definitely watched. Bobby, did you watch the whole show?
I did, start to finish.
You always watch it though, right? I mean, have you missed one any time recently?
No, I don't. Honestly, I don't think so. There might be times where I've not started it at the time that it went live and came in on it and then kind of like fast forwarded through certain parts, but I've always watched it for sure.
I was thinking about that today. I don't know why. I was thinking about the Oscars, and I got to the point of thinking about that because there was this like period of time where I kind of like, I think, resisted watching them because I was like, this is silly that we watch a bunch of celebrities pat themselves on the back. And oh, you know, this is a long time ago now. I don't think that period lasted very long. And I almost, if I remember right, I feel like even during that period of my life, I probably still ended up watching them. Even now, I tried to not watch them. Now I'm just like, it's fine. It's just a good night of fun, whatever. So what did we think? I want to ask Michelle first. Michelle, I've always feel like you're a bit of a,
I love the Academy Awards.
You like the award shows in general, though, I feel like.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I always try to watch it. I always try to catch the Emmys and the...
Tonys?
If I can catch the Tonys, I will.
Golden Globes.
Golden Globes, yeah. Those are probably the big ones for me. I'm not a big music award show. I feel like the Grammys have really... Yeah. And BAFTA Awards. I wish I could watch the BAFTA Awards.
Yeah, do they broadcast it here?
Yes and no. That makes any sense. I don't think they do, but maybe they do. But I don't think you have to really have to have a subscription to something very specific to have it.
But gotcha.
Not like BritBox.
I think it was on. I can't remember what it was on, though.
Like, it was on something, but I think if you didn't have a subscription, that would carry that thing.
I wanted to say, like, I was going to say something like, isn't it on TNT? But that's the SAG Awards, right? Aren't they always on, like, TBS or TNT or something? Doesn't mean BAFTAs aren't as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but anyway.
I don't watch the SAG Awards that much.
Maybe I should. I've watched it, I think, 1 year. And I feel like every time the SAG Awards come up, it'll be like the night of, and I'll realize, oh, the SAG Awards are on.
Yeah.
And it's always like, well, we're watching this other thing or doing something else.
I feel like that's what always happens.
It's like I never think about it or know about it ahead of time.
But yeah. I love the Academy Awards. I've watched them since I was a child. I'm trying to think of any years that I've missed. I don't think I've ever missed any years.
What would you think of this year? As the show goes, we're not talking about the actual awards. I mean, I guess that's a part of it.
Yeah, so
the awards
I would too, say overall it was a lackluster year. I don't think Jimmy Kimmel was at the top of his game. I think some of the writing for the people that were introducing awards, I think even their writing was kind of... I say that and there were some highlights, but overall, I'd say a lackluster year.
Well, I'm curious to know what Bobby thinks, but I'll go ahead and say I actually kind of disagree. I actually enjoyed it overall.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought the pacing was good this year,
I'm not saying it was like a knock it out of the park. Like, man, that was a great show. Like, but overall, it definitely went smoothly, even though it started late. So it started off on the wrong foot, but they made up time. It ended like basically early. And overall, I don't know. I actually thought it was pretty good. I mean, there's things I would still wish for. Like, I kind of miss the days of, like, bigger openings to the show.
I agree.
That was very lackluster.
The Billy Crystal era. And
I guess.
He used to do big openings.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That.
The Billy Crystal era.
But overall, I enjoyed it. Again, I didn't think it was one of the best or amazing, but I thought it was a pretty good year. Bobby, what did you think overall of the show?
I'd have to echo your thoughts, honestly. I felt like it was pretty enjoyable. I can't recall a time when I watched the Oscars and I was laughing a lot. And there was a few times this telecast where I was laughing, and that's it was meant to be funny, what the stuff that I was laughing at. So I was like, wow, you know, I'm enjoying this more than usual. And I think what also may have played a part in that is that this is the first year, I think, that I've seen the least amount of nominated movies. I've usually seen every single one.
Yeah, Michelle and I talked about that a lot right before and during the show. We're like, man, we really did not watch most of this stuff. But sorry, go on.
No, yeah. So I felt like maybe partially because of that, had less of a vested interest in seeing who would win, right. Just out of curiosity, of course. And, you know, there's definitely some on the list that I have seen and would want to see if those people would win or if that particular movie was going to win. But outside of that, I was just kind of just sitting back and just seeing it all unfold. And I think that, like you guys said, the pacing seemed fine to me. And I mean, you just kind of know at this point, you're at least in for 3.5 hours. I don't think I've ever, there probably is, and you'd have to look it up, but I don't know that I've ever seen or can remember a telecast that was at least just about 3 hours or slightly over.
Right.
It always seems to go around 3.5 to me. But outside of that, yeah, I just felt like with Jimmy Kimmel, it seemed like at this point he's most comfortable doing it because he's done it a few times now. So it's just felt like it was sort of old hat for him in a way. And I think that some of the stuff that he did worked particularly well. And I also really enjoyed his back and forth, so to speak, with Trump, with his last thing that he said about that. I thought that was pretty clever and funny. But I think that for a year after having such a difficult year with different times with the strikes and everything else, this one kind of felt like even the people there were having fun and enjoying themselves, especially because it was, as pointed out, I think at one point there was a lot of newcomers, a lot of people up for awards for the first time. And so I think that injected a little bit of energy into it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely things that worked well. I would agree that Jimmy's reading of his tweet from Donald Trump was probably his best joke over the whole night,
in my opinion. A totally like done off the cuff, like
totally off the cuff, and I think it was his best joke the whole night.
Yeah, which so Variety has an article, I think it came out like 3 hours ago, that's like basically an exclusive with I guess one or two of the producers about like different, you know, tidbits of what was going on backstage during things. And they talk about that, him reading the Truth Social posts from Donald Trump, and how I guess this one producer tried to talk him out of it, like, oh, don't do it, I don't want to give Trump airtime, this is the one night we don't talk about him, and let's just like keep him out of the Oscars. And then Kimmel, I guess, just kind of says, you know, just trust me on this. And he quickly went over to his writers and they came up with that, you know, jail time joke, which totally landed and worked.
Oh, it landed spectacularly. Mm-hmm. Well, the entire audience was laughing. And I were giggling pretty hard. Yeah, on the couch.
No, that was pretty perfect.
It was. I think that went really well, and I think honestly, the segment that had, it was a quick segment, but it was Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling kind of having their Barbenheimer off. I thought that was a pretty good one. And they, yeah, I like that they were talking about basically what is going to be a new award next year, which is for stuntmen, considering their upcoming film is called The Fall Guy, and it's about a stunt guy and a director falling for each other. But I think that whole segment worked out really well. I liked the dedication to all stuntmen through history, and they had a whole bunch of clips from really great movies and great stunts, and I don't know. I thought that was actually really good. There's many, many, many more highlights, in my opinion, for sure.
Yeah, no,
for sure. A lot of the acceptance speeches were really good.
I was going to ask, I mean, one thing I liked, and I guess I kind of forgot that this was something they used to do, I think in 2009, the kind of like previous, or not just the previous, but previous, you know, best mm-hmm. actor winners or best actress winners, mm-hmm. like individually kind of talking about each nominee. I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, they started off the whole show with one of those for best supporting actress. Yeah. And I mean, it did take mm-hmm. a little while. And I remember feeling like, oh man, like they started late and this feels like this already took forever just to do one award. Like, what are we in store for? But again, in the end, it ended up being fine on time. And I like those segments. I like them kind of giving each actress and actor more focus.
No, I like it too. It worked for me back when they did it last time. It works for me this time too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was good too.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I think it was a good idea just because it's a passing of the torch, and something else does that too. And I can't remember what it was that where you get the past winner that gives it to the up and coming winner. And I think that is a nice touch, just having that. And it's a way to be able to include past winners as well, just right. sort of as a reminder for people too.
Yeah. I mean, they always have the previous year's person being that person, but to have even multiple previous winners mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. all ages, of all decades and times, like different people, like some of them won their awards a long time ago and some of them recently won their awards. So I think it was nice to kind of have that freshening. Right. Like say for 2002, there was, you know, like they had, I mean, they always have the previous year, but like to have more recent ones, but right. then also older ones was nice.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, like Rita Moreno and stuff like that.
Right, right. No, I thought that was good.
And then Jimmy Kimmel's assistant. That was pretty funny, actually. That kind of worked for me, too.
Oh, the thing with the tequila?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, that kind of worked.
Yeah, Guillermo.
That was a good... I thought the Guillermo thing was pretty good, too.
And I was thinking about as we were watching it, like, how, I mean, obviously, Guillermo has been such a focus of the show for so long. Oh,
yeah.
Like, how he's gotten so comfortable at just being a total like, celebrity in himself, you know? Like,
mm-hmm. Well, like, he even was interviewing people on the red carpet and right. having little segments with them. Like, oh, yeah, no. And, like, everybody's been on Kimmel. Like, they all know who Guillermo... Like, everybody yeah. Everybody knows who Guillermo is. He's not like a random person with a microphone totally. In his hand.
No, not at all.
So, but yeah, there are. Oh, there's a lot of good things. I think
awards wise themselves, like like big shocks. I mean, I guess we're all admitting here that there's a lot of stuff we didn't see, and I don't know about you guys, but. Tend not to have too much of a take on stuff I haven't seen before because I'm just like, well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone tells me that, certain things are great, but if I haven't seen them myself, I'm like, I don't know. But so with that said, I guess it's hard for me to have like any surprises when it comes to the awards. But.
Yeah, in a way, not seeing as many films as I didn't see, it kind of made it a little more like, oh, I accept that because I don't know any better.
Right.
I can't compare it because I haven't seen it.
Right.
Kind of like, I mean, like, so one of the big things that I saw today on, you know, the media feeds was everybody was super upset. Not everybody, but there was a lot of people that are really upset about Best Actress. And Emma Stone won it for Poor Things. But a lot of people are upset and they say that Lily Gladstone should have won it for
Killers of the Flower Moon.
And while I have seen Killers of the Flower Moon, and I think Lily Gladstone's performance in that was exceptional, and quite honestly, she could have been on the screen. She was the highlight of that movie, in my opinion. Quite honestly, like, realistically, she was the best part of that entire film and could have been on the screen more. And I have not seen Poor Things. And I admit that. And I realize now it is streaming on Hulu, and so I could watch mm-hmm. it. But, from what I can see and what I have heard about Emma Stone's performance in Poor Things, it sounds like it's pretty well deserved, in my opinion. So I can't give my two cents on I agree or I disagree. I'm kind of like, well, I don't know. I didn't see Poor Things. I can't argue that her performance wasn't better than Lily's. I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be great to have a Native American actress win an Oscar. That, totally. You know, just for that reason alone, you know, and she also was actually great in the film. And but, you know, I have a hard time like taking out having a take on it as well. Like when I see everyone kind of complaining, I don't see everyone complaining about it, but like you said, it's definitely been mentioned.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I didn't see Poor Things, but from everything I can gather, it seems like she's fantastic in it. It's not like this is the first award she's won in the award season.
Correct.
I don't know.
She's definitely great in Poor Things. And for me, since I have seen both, I would say they got it right. And if you wanted to equate it, I would say, let's say it was an even playing field and both of their performances were fantastic. Well, in Poor Things, Emma Stone is throughout the entire film. And in Killers of the Flower Moon, Lily Gladstone, she's missing out of a chunk of the film.
Right.
So you get more of a good performance from Emma Stone because she's in it more. So that alone, it's like, if you just put it at their performances being even, you're getting more performance out of Emma Stone. So to me, it's like, if you just did that alone, you would have to say Emma Stone.
Even but in a film in with a general, shorter runtime.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, to me, their performances, you could easily say they were on par with each other, but you just, you know, just out of the fact that you're getting more out of Emma Stone leads it that way. But I think that I saw a lot of articles also mentioning the fact that Lily Gladstone should have been in the best supporting actress category and would have been a better chance there because of how little, or not how little, but she's more in a supporting role because she's not quite in the film as much. And it would have probably benefited her more. But then I think I saw something too, sort of as a rebuttal to that. And I don't know if it was from Lily herself or someone else, but the point was made that by being in the lead actress category, I think it was her who said it, but there was something to the effect that her being in that lead actress category has now gotten her more leading actress parts.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some people who have been in the supporting actress category stay getting supporting actress parts offered to them.
Right.
So it was like, so even though I lost, I am still getting lead role offers as opposed to supporting actress offers. So I was like, that's a good point.
It pigeonholes her in a better category.
Right.
Right.
And then, I mean, I'll be honest, like, I don't think there was, I really don't feel like there were any upsets, in my opinion. Like, unfortunately, I didn't get to
see. There was one for me.
Was there? I didn't get to see any of the animated short films, so I couldn't really, like, say anything on that. But I know the one that really kind of has everybody up in arms, if there's really any other one, would be the one for Best Animated Feature. And again, I have to say, even though I haven't even seen the film that won, which is The Boy and the Heron, I don't know why it's surprising because it's done so well at all the other awards. So I feel like that was kind of almost a no-brainer going into the Oscars that it was going to get the Best Animated Feature.
I mean, I'm with you that I can't have a take on it because I sadly haven't seen The Boy and the Heron. I still haven't seen the second Spider-Verse film. Like, so, and that's the movie, you know, from what I've gathered that most people expected to win Best Animated Feature. But, this is something else Michelle and I were talking about off air before the show. Like, I haven't seen those movies, but from everything I have heard about The Boy and the Heron, it's fantastic. I've heard nothing but praise.
Yeah.
So for me, my perspective going into the awards, I was like, man, I've heard so many great things about Boy and the Heron. I feel like that's going to win. Like, critically more so than Spider-Man. So I don't know. Then when I was scrolling through Twitter in the middle of the show and seeing people just going, oh, man, major upset, major upset, major upset. I'm like, was it though? I mean, I'm sure Spider-Man's fantastic and I can't wait to see it. But I'm not saying it's not good. But was it really an upset? But what was your upset, Bobby?
Well, before I get to that, I will say in regards to that specific category, the only thing I can, because I have not seen The Boy and the Heron, but from what I've gathered from when it came out, there was a decent amount of people saying it was fantastic, but also within that same amount of people, there seemed to be a general consensus that this would not be at the top of their list of Miyazaki films. Like, this is in terms of his own category, that this would sit somewhere lower. And so I thought that was interesting, even just within that time frame when that was being said about it when it first came out. And then at that time, to me, it seemed like the Across the Spider-Verse was being talked about that not only should it be nominated for Best Animated Film, but also in a Best Picture film, says in terms of how well that was received and how well it was talked about during that time when it came out. So to me, once we got into the announcements of the Oscars for that category, I already had it in my head that The Boy and the Heron would win just because it was Miyazaki. I just figured that I just did not think that Across the Spider-Verse was going to win just because of it's like, I don't know, where something is like really good, but then there's something that's you're going up against someone that's legendary. It just seemed like to me that was the factor of it is like, well, Miyazaki is legendary. Excuse me, he's already won one, and so has Spider-Verse. So to me, it was like, okay, well, this one I think might go to him, especially like you said, Michelle. It had picked up some other awards in other award shows, and I think I only saw Spider-Verse pick up a couple in some other ones, but smaller ones. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, I could definitely see that this might end up being the one that would win once it was announced, and so that one didn't surprised me. There was two surprises, one less so and one more generally kind of shocking to me. The one that was less so was, but still a surprise, was Best Adapted Screenplay. I did not think it would go to American Fiction, even though I've seen it.
Really?
I figured that was, since it got shoehorned into that category, I just figured it would go to Barbie. And because it was, you know, kind of pushed there as opposed to original screenplay. So I was like, yeah, it's probably going to go to Barbie because it got pushed in that category. And so that most people were probably rewarded in that way. So that one surprised me, but it was like, oh, it was a good surprise because I did like American Fiction. I thought, you know, it was a good screenplay and everything. So I was okay with it. But the one that I was more shocked and kind of like, huh, I don't know how I feel, was visual effects. And
oh, really?
That went to Godzilla Minus One. And I thought for sure that that was in the bag for the creator, because to me, those visual effects were phenomenal. And in Godzilla Minus One, even though I love that movie, the visual effects that are done are pretty much just on Godzilla. And obviously there's city stuff being torn up and stuff, but still most of the visual effects are pushed around Godzilla. Whereas the creator, it's a whole world of stuff being done in visual effects that looks seamless. And so I just thought that I was shocked basically that Godzilla Minus One ended up picking up that win for best visual effects.
I guess I was thinking about it when that award happened, that you mean, because I was definitely rooting for the creator, because I agree the visual effects are incredible. I love Gareth Edwards, and yeah, was the movie like as great as I was kind of hoping it would be? No, but I still very much enjoyed the creator overall. and it looks incredible. So yeah, when Godzilla Minus One won, I was like, okay, that's cool. I haven't seen that, so I mean, I have nothing to say about it. But yeah, I guess it was like a minor surprise for me, even though I hadn't seen Godzilla. So I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Like, I mean, visually, the creator is stunning. Even though the film didn't live up to my expectation of what I was hoping that film would be, it was still a solid film. But yeah, the visual effects are just they're stunning and breathtaking. It's gorgeous. It's a beautiful, beautiful film. Gareth Edwards has just absolutely nothing to be ashamed about with that film. Like, it was spectacular.
You have to wonder, like, anybody who's done visual effects on a movie that's coming out in 2024, going, can we just push it to 2025? Like, Dune 2 has this wrapped up. Like, I don't want to compete against that.
Like, can we just, can we release later, like, you know, March of 2025?
I swear my visual effects are good.
Right. But I will say, like, the Godzilla Minus One team, I thought they were the most adorable, like, acceptance. Yeah.
They're definitely fun. It was fun to see them go on stage.
They were so cute with their little Godzillas. And I felt so bad because he was really doing so well trying to say his speech. And then, of course, the freaking music starts. And I'm like, just give them
let him finish.
15 more freaking seconds, man. Come on. Like, you know, it was kind of frustrating. Actually, if I could say, there was one that was a surprise to me, only because I guess I don't think I recognized that it was even nominated. And it was for Best Short. Where is it? I can't even see on this list now. The Wes Anderson film.
Oh, the Netflix thing he did? Or it was on Netflix, yeah.
Like, when that happened, I was like, really? And
The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess I had forgotten it was even nominated. And so when he won it, I was like, well, that's awesome because I love Wes. Congratulations. But also like, oh, I guess I wasn't expecting that. So that kind of surprised me in a good way. I think if anything, it was really surprising that Wes wasn't there.
Yeah. Like, it was a good joke by, it was the presenter, right, that said something like, we know you're good at long films too, or something like that.
I feel like the unscripted moments last night were the best moments, and the scripted ones were just, they were kind of misses for me. But yeah, I feel like there's the big elephant in the room that we haven't spoken about, of like moments that were probably the best moment of the entire night.
Oh, like, you know, I mean,
I was going to get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
If we're talking about the same thing, I don't know, but
I'm sure we're talking.
What was it?
But yeah, as far as the categories, everybody else winning. I mean, I had a feeling it was going to be between Poor Things and Oppenheimer for most of the night. Of course, my heart was still hoping more for Barbie, but it didn't surprise me that Oppenheimer and Poor Things kind of swept the show. That didn't shock me.
But you were talking about the big moment of the night. I mean, I assume you're talking about the moment basically everyone seemed to be waiting for. It seemed to
again, this is more of the fun and the show and the things that you're talking about. Like, oh, you know, and that was the performance of I'm Just Ken. It was amazing. It was so good. It was so good.
Did it live up to your expectations?
It totally lived up to my expectations, and I was so excited. And I was so glad that some of the Kins came back to do the dance number. Like, Simu came back, and the one guy who, I can never remember his name, he's in Bridgerton.
Well, the guy that was, he just played Bob Marley. And
oh, yeah, him. Yeah. He came back for it, and then the new Doctor Who is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, yes, they got the people back. Like, it was really cool. And like, it was neat to kind of see there's two humongous like throwbacks to the way the whole performance was done. And the first is basically the salute to Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, which is the suits, the tuxedos the guys were wearing, and then obviously Ryan Gosling in pink. It's like, it's exactly the way Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, the way the one song, I think it's Dame, I think is the song, the way it looks there. And then like the cutout of the old school original the OG Barbie head and the cardboard, that's a throwback to another old black and white movie where they used cutouts of heads, and it's kind of it wasn't a Busby Berkeley movie, but it's another pretty well-known old-school movie, and it has this huge number, and they use like those exact, like it's framed exactly the way they did it. So it was really cool to see like those nods given during the performance, but it was just a fun performance. Like Ryan Gosling was eating it up. He was loving every minute. It was awesome. Who could watch that and not smile? Come on. I mean, poor Margot Robbie was like trying so She was laughing so damn hard.
Even like Billie Eilish sitting behind it.
Oh, they were all laughing their asses off.
Even the performance hadn't even started yet, and it was already like, okay, this is funny.
This is hilarious. He was just sitting there with his little hat over his head, and Billie was like leaning away, like I'm done. It's done. Over. It's over. It was awesome. And Billie's performance was spectacular with Phineas, actually. It was really good.
Oh, yeah. I think theirs was the first.
Theirs was the first one. All of the musical performances I thought were really good. John Baptiste was really good. The performers from the Osage Nation came out and played their song. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought they were all really good. And then that other girl, the performer that you and I have no idea who she was.
Is it Becky G? This is how old I am now. I had to look her up.
I did not know who Becky G was.
Saw her during the red carpet, and it was like, all right, like, we're going to look up. Like, I think she talked about a song of hers, and we're like, I've never heard that before. Right. And we had to listen to it.
But even her performance was really good with all the girls coming out and singing with her. I was like, oh, that was really good. Like, I will say, as far as the musical numbers went, that for, you know, the best original song, I thought those were all really good. I mean, but obviously, I'm Just Ken stole the show. I mean, stole the freaking
Oscars. Didn't get the award, but it stole the...
I didn't think it was going to win the award.
No, I figured Billy
Eilish was going to win that award. But stole the show.
Yeah.
Stole the show. I loved it. It was awesome. I was so happy.
There was I guess since we're kind of talking about some of the moments that we really liked... For me, the moment I mentioned earlier that I was laughing a lot, and one of the things that had me laughing, one of the smaller things that had me laughing was the back and forth banter between Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, that was really good.
Then when they brought Keaton into it, and when they go to him, he looks like Batman because he's just giving them the scowl. And you can just picture the mask over his head if you were just watching him like that. And it was just so good the way it was done. And you can tell he wasn't like prepped for that. That was just his natural reaction to be like giving them the look like they're the bad guys still. It was just so great. I like that one.
Was really good.
And, but the one that had me laughing quite a bit was definitely John Cena going for it yesterday. Coming on stage, just going absolutely for it and having the card there. And the fact that I didn't know what they were doing other than when he was like, when Kimmel set it up to say, oh, you know, there was a streaker that came across and then you see Cena pop his head out and he's like, no, I don't want to do it. You know, the back and forth. But then when he gets out on stage and he announces that he's doing the category for best costumes, it was just perfect.
It was
fit exactly well. So it was good.
The kind of bit that, like, right as it started, and then like you were just describing what Kimmel's doing, the whole like, you know, acting like, hey, come out, it's time for you to run out now.
Mm-hmm.
Like right at the beginning of it, I remember going, oh man, this is going to be stupid. Like, this is going to be a stupid bit. Another one of those, like, you try too hard or something kind of bits. And then actually, it totally worked for me. It was hilarious.
I think it's because he ended up actually coming out on the stage. Had it just been like he just stayed behind the thing or just like vanished completely, it would not have worked. But him actually coming out.
Yeah.
Pulled it off.
That was good. And then with the Schwarzenegger and DeVito thing, it's funny because, you know, I think most people immediately like, oh, twins, but they don't even think they mentioned twins. I don't even think they said anything about and then that turns into the whole Batman bit with Keaton, which was that was pretty good.
Not until the actual acceptance speech by their person did they mention twins.
Exactly.
But I think, you know, there was definitely some good, I think the people that were basically mentioning like political things, world event things, you know, the the gentleman who won for 20 Days in Mariupol, I thought his speech was really great. I'm trying to think. There was somebody else that had a really good one that was kind of politically. You know,
well, there's one speech that's gotten a lot of discussion. I don't even want to get into it. Who won for, man, why am I blanking on his name and his film's name? Zone of Interest.
The Zone of Interest. Yeah, Jonathan Glazer. For the best international feature.
Yeah. There's been a lot of...
a lot of interesting banter.
Yeah. It's definitely the one thing, I guess, that happened or something that was said, you know. I mean, that I guess you could argue in the show that definitely got mixed reaction from people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For sure.
Which I get.
Yeah.
But to counter that a little bit, and not counter what you're saying, but right. to counter as one thing that seemed to be kind of polarizing, one thing that I saw that seemed to be very positively received was John Mulaney and his part that did when he was doing his part. And many people have said that they would like to see him host next year.
Yeah, I've seen that as well today. Michelle, I feel like Michelle's this look on her face, since I obviously no one else can see it but me, of just like, him, huh?
I know. I've got
the hot take that I don't like Mulaney.
I kept hearing everybody going like, oh, it was so good. I was like, was it though?
I thought it was good.
I thought it was kind of stupid. I thought it was
pretty good.
I'm also not the biggest fan of John Mulaney.
Well,
I don't hate him, but I'm not the biggest fan. And honestly, I would not want to see him host.
Yeah, I think there would be more people coming out against it if he was announced it. Mm-hmm. But since it wasn't like a thing being said by trades or anything, or at least I haven't seen, but people just sort of commenting on his performance or the way he did it, because he did it in a way that it was almost like he was doing a little bit of stand up.
Yeah.
It was like he wasn't reading from a prompter or anything. He had that down and he had it like worked out. And so the timing was good and everything was really working and hitting. And then he builds and then he, you know, lands that sort of punchline to it. And so I think people were performing or going off of that performance and saying like, oh, you know, he'd be a good host. And so I think, and he also hosted one of the award shows this year and everybody said he did a great job there as well. So I think it's building off of that. But I think that if it actually got announced, then you'd see other people on the opposing side come out and start to talk about things that's in his past that maybe not be the greatest thing. And so I don't even know that he would want to do it just because he probably like, man, I just got past all that crap. I don't want to bring it back up again and, you know, have to like deal with that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought the bit was good, but I would have to agree. I don't necessarily want to see his host. I just don't think he has the
chutzpah.
Yeah, sure. That's a good way to put it. One award, because I always care a little more for some reason about original score. I was glad to see Ludwig win for Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
I thought I was too worried about that. Happen, yeah, exactly. I figured that's what was going to win, but I was glad to see him win for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we just jump into the whole Oppenheimer of the night. It was definitely what stole the show.
No surprises.
It was really not surprising that it, you know, best supporting actor. I was not surprised by that. No. Best actor was also not surprised by that. Best director, not surprised. Best picture,
I wasn't surprised by actor. And I think it's great that Killian won. There was the part of me that just wanted Paul Giamatti to win. I just, because I like Paul so much, but I also like Killian a lot. I mean, I was watching the movie thinking, man, I still really wish they would put out a 4K release of Sunshine. I love that movie.
I thought they did. I heard that they did.
If one was announced, so I've tried to find it today, and I couldn't find anything saying that it was out or that it was coming out, a 4K release. No, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think the reason why I think that is because I thought Dave Chen from Filmcast was mentioning something about rewatching that movie and mentioned 4K, but I could be twisting that with something else that was 4K that he talked about, and that's why it's sticking in my head.
But anyway, my point being, I've always liked Killian, And I think it's great that he won. I'm super happy that he won. But I thought it'd have been great for Paul to win. And I'd have been curious to see his speech.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would agree. Paul Giamatti, I think, is... I don't think he's overrated in any way, shape, or form. I think almost everything I've ever seen him do, he gives 1,000% in everything. And I think he's... No, I guess
he... Maybe he gave 1,000% in Spider-Man 2, but...
Oh.
There's the rhino. Wow. But, wow, there's that. You know.
I mean, but, you know, he's one of those actors that I think... I don't think he's, like, always, like... kind of the supporting actor. He does do leads, but I think people kind of still see him as a supporting actor.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the unfortunately is the problem with Paul Giamatti is everybody's visual of him is that he's the supporting actor, even though he's been a lead in many movies. But
and overall, I would agree. Though I think in this case, I really think it's probably just a matter of he was going up against Cillian Murphy going up against and Cillian, Oppenheimer.
I think,
Oppenheimer
and, yeah, the freight train that was Oppenheimer. Yeah. Just it just was. Just is what it is.
Didn't he play John Adams or something?
Yeah.
He did. Or, it was a very excellent series. I really wish that some people would, you know, take a chance on it and finish it and enjoy it.
Sounds like you're talking to someone in particular.
I'll have to ask Yasha about that. It's weird. I wonder why he hasn't watched it.
For someone who enjoys colonial American history as much as you do.
Sometimes you miss things, and then finally when you watch them, you do get through most of it.
You did. Then, you got halfway through. You did super well. You got all the way to Holland.
Life finds a way to get in the way. I don't know what to tell you.
I'll tell you what, anyway. Though. There's one film that I've been wanting to watch, like all like since it was when it first came out, and obviously all award season's been talked about. I've been wanting to see it, and now I want to see it so ridiculously bad after last night. That is Anatomy of a Fall. I am literally chomping the bit to watch that film. I am also with Poor Things, but it's like I'm almost frustrated that I didn't watch Anatomy of a Fall because it looks so damn good. I want to see it.
I don't disagree.
Speaking of Anatomy of a Fall, did you guys see the part where the dog, I don't know the dog's name from the
Messi.
Movie.
Messi.
Messi, yeah. Yes.
The Walk of Fame.
He had the little leg up on the Matt Damon star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Yeah. I thought that was funny because I was like, you know, there was no Matt Damon things going on with Kimmel throughout the telecast. So they kind of put that little button at the end there.
Made it the whole way through. I was kind of shocked, actually, until that. And then I was like, there it is.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah.
Was there anything that didn't work for you, like, as far as the show?
I mean, other than just some, I think there was one or two, minor, like you were mentioning, Michelle, just jokes. Like, I think the joke with, oh man, what were they presenting? I'm blanking. And I'm blanking on their names. She would just play Ursula and the live action. Why am I blanking on her name right now?
Oh,
Emma Stone?
No. Ursula and
Ursula. What am I thinking?
And Little Mermaid.
Oh.
Octavia Spencer.
Yeah, Octavia Spencer and
man. Why is my brain blanking now? And it's funny, earlier I was thinking about her name. Yeah. No, I agree. Their jokes, I don't think, hit. And honestly, I don't think...
Melissa McCarthy.
Yes,
thank you. I don't think their jokes were written very well, and I didn't like the Kate McKinnon bit either.
The Kate McKinnon
with
bit?
With Spielberg?
Yeah.
Oh.
You
yeah.
Didn't like that?
I guess. I don't know.
I thought Spielberg made it work.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, honestly.
I think Spielberg made it work, but it wasn't a good bit.
Right. No, I mean, it wasn't a great bit, but I would agree with Spielberg making it work for sure. Yeah. But I mean, in terms of there was just like minor things like that, that always happens. There's always some jokes that land and some that don't. Beyond
I don't think the monologue was very good.
Well, no, I mean, and like I said earlier, I wish there was a bigger kind of opener to it than just the whole bit of inserting Kimmel in another movie, you know, which was cool, but I want more than that. I don't know why. I just do.
You want Billy Crystal. You want to go big or go home.
I do.
I get that.
The Oscars.
I don't disagree with you. But I want a big show, too.
You know, you remove that. It helps with the runtime. I get it.
Well, I mean, I think the two awards that won that weren't able to actually accept their speech, that helped speed things up as well.
Oh, it did, yeah.
The I always say it wrong.
In memoriam.
In memoriam. They, in recent years, have cut it much shorter with an extended version of it online. And I think that helps because I remember there's been years where it's long and they have to do like three songs basically for it.
That reminds me though, maybe if anything, that would be one bit of the Oscars that didn't work for me as much.
The song or the fact that it's so short?
I think I prefer, and I've seen complaints about this as well, but I was thinking about it during the show. You know, they never went like full screen with like the kind of montage that they had created.
It's the camera pointing at the screen.
Yeah, they always had it on a screen on the stage in some way, and that definitely changed forms. And then they were always showing the stage, and then just that was in the background kind of thing. Don't get me wrong, it was very big on the screen, and I mean, I didn't have a problem reading it, but I did kind of miss them going full screen with it. And then cutting in and out of what we're seeing on stage.
Of the performance.
Of the performance,
basically not having a person's, I'm trying to think what it's called. But anyways, not having a person's image up and then just having it kind of go black and then showing the performer for a few seconds and then going back to the screen.
Yeah,
going back through. I would agree. And I'm old school. I watched the Oscars since I was a little kid. Even when I was a kid, I never minded that segment being long.
Right.
It doesn't bother me.
No, exactly.
But I know some people are like, oh, I like it because it's shorter. And it does help with the runtime, cutting it shorter. But you can show everybody. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, and they definitely do it. They do it in a way now, like toward the end of it. Like, people that aren't as well known were kind of, they were all shown at the screen at the same time, like four, five at a time or something like that. And that kind of helps speed it up. And
it does, because it's... You want to give those people their moment, too, because they're in the showbiz business. You know, they've worked at it their entire lives. Basically, their entire careers were given to it. And, you know, there's people that know them and cherish them in their career and work with them. And so they should have their moment. So, but I thought that performance was spectacular. I mean, come on, it's Andrea Bocelli. Like,
I could tell whoever the other singer was, like his in-ear monitors.
Oh, he was having the worst night with his in-ears. Yeah,
screwing with them. There was obviously an issue there. Totally an issue. You could tell there was one point when they come back from a quick pause, like they take a couple measures off, and then when they come back, he seemed thrown off with his performance for a second.
Yeah. Anyway. I did see complaints on that part. Then some people were saying like you said, David, they had a hard time reading it. But then it was like, you know, because there's like dancers and stuff. And you're like, well, is this like the time to have dancers going to for like as a performance to the in memoriam? And I was like, yeah, I can understand why that would seem a little off.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was that complaint. And then I think that for me, as far as jokes, yeah, that's, you know, that's common. I don't think anyone ever hits 100% of the jokes Oscars. But the one that I think that I felt most awkward and cringy at was probably the Robert Downey Jr. jokes about the drug use. And it, like, the first one was like, oh, okay. But then it, like, kept going, and I was like, ugh.
Yeah, it's like he went back for, like, two more jabs after that. And I was you didn't need to do that. You didn't need to do the first one. But you definitely don't need to keep going with it. It's not working. I don't know. I don't I don't think making fun of somebody who has not only had addiction issues but has overcome and successfully continued to succeed in life from an addiction, I don't think that's funny. I don't find it entertaining.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that there's someone who could have made it funny in a better way if they were an actual comedian. But yeah, I just thought that it just didn't work.
That's really poor taste.
And yeah, but you know, unless it be known that there's no bad blood, that you could see them at the end of the show on stage together talking and laughing and hugging and stuff like that. So there's nothing there. But yeah, so there was that. But I think production wise, there was one thing that while I thought it was kind of interesting and worked, at the same time, it felt a little like clumsy and not completely well thought out, was they would have these times where whoever was just off stage, whoever just on stage had won their award and they're leaving, they'd cut to this hallway.
Then there'd be
someone in the hallway talking, and the people are coming behind them, and they don't notice that the people are coming behind them. So it would lead to some awkwardness as there was the bit pass by.
The bit with the president of the Academy, she was talking. The whole time she's talking, and I'm like, but they're coming, but they're coming.
I know. And she was actually talking about something really important and interesting because it was the whole science, arts and sciences part.
And Billie Eilish is left like, she stops with this awkward, like, what do I do?
Do I keep walking or do we just wait? Like, the hallway doesn't work.
It's like they were obviously going for this, like, they... I mean, I think the producers wanted the people to walk by, like
the fresh energy, the
hubbub of the backstage, but then, like, if that message isn't coming across well to the actual performers walking coming off stage, there's obviously that awkward moment, like the one with Billie Eilish and the whole, like, she stands against the wall and it's kind of like, I don't know what to do here.
I
forgot about the whole hallway thing, and even what's his name, who was like the. Like the MC of backstage, why am I blanking?
David Alan Greer.
Yeah, like there seemed to be this awkward, like he's just talking off camera, but then it was like, no, you need to be on camera. So he like comes out at that
Ran out at that one point, almost, and then was like, Michael Keaton.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
it was super awkward and weird.
Yeah, I was like, this was not executed well. This was not fully thought out.
Like I said, in principle, it seems kind of cool. Like you said, David, it's sort of like getting that hubbub of the backstage and, you know, seeing them walk off and catching a little extra glimpse of them as they're leaving.
Right.
But yeah, they're fresh. Their just, energy's fresh.
They needed a bigger hallway or something.
Just make it a little wider.
Or to have set themselves in a different position so that, you know, it was a little bit better stage. But yeah, that was not. Great.
Agreed.
Well, award show season is over.
That's it. We move on to this year.
Well, actually, there is one more, which I remember there being a little bit of talk about. Was like, why is this coming after the Oscars and not before it? And I think it's the Writers Guild Awards.
Okay.
I think that's next, and that's the last one. And I was like, yeah, that's true. I wonder why they didn't have that prior to the Oscars, but it is what it is.
Yeah, really, it's just the Tony Awards, which is always in the summer. And I do enjoy the Tony Awards, but I don't loop them in with award season.
Well, yeah, it's a different, you know, it's just different.
Completely, yeah, because their season is off season.
Different medium,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're basically out of time, but before we go, and I mean, Bobby, if you have anything real quick.
No.
But I was going to bring up, I don't know, Michelle, what your thoughts, I guess I know your thoughts on this. So Bobby, have you ever been to, I don't know if you've seen these, it's usually like a touring kind of performance of like, you'll have an orchestra play the score of a film and you watch the movie and you listen to the orchestra play live. Have you ever been on one of those?
No, I've seen them done, but I have not been to one.
Like, we've been to the Harry Potter ones.
Yeah, they're kind of making their way through. They're almost done with the Harry Potter films, but we've been to the last like four of those, I think, or three of the Harry Potter. I know, like, here in Orlando anyway, I think it's this June is when they do Deathly Hallows Part 1. And they do it every year. And I know they've had other ones come into town. I haven't seen most of the other ones. I know Lord of the Rings was recently one they did. And then even Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which I heard, though, wasn't like an orchestra. It was like a DJ. And
it wasn't great. That's
the person we talked to who went wasn't thrilled with it, actually. No. But So this weekend, and that was another thing funny about the whole Batman bit in the Oscars, was that we just went to one Saturday night for Batman, the 89 Batman.
Oh. Michael Keaton in all his glory.
Yeah, which, I mean, that is a movie. And I think this happens for all of us, you know, as you get older and you have certain movies as a kid that you just watched a lot, you know, super well. But then you kind of almost forgot you knew it that well. But then you watch it when you're older and you're like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Like, mm-hmm. I know everything about this. And don't get me wrong. I haven't forgotten that I know Batman. I've seen that movie a lot. But it's still funny, like, watching it and going and thinking in my head as I'm watching the movie going, wow, I know every single word of this movie, like, verbatim. I would have no problem. Like, completely reciting this screenplay. It's kind of scary. But anyway, so we went to a performance of that. And I bring it up because I was really kind of disappointed in it. And I feel bad. We had a great time. We went with some friends. And overall, I had a good time.
We had a nice evening. I really loved that.
I loved that movie. And just seeing it with an orchestra was still enjoyable. But having been to some of the other ones, this production value is kind of lacking. And the biggest, weirdest thing, the thing that threw me off the most was, like, there was parts of the movie where the sound design was missing.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
Where, and it seemed to be mostly focused on scenes when the orchestra is playing, but there was still no need to cut some of that sound design out, and it just made it awkward. Like, watching a movie without sound design in parts is, like, weird. And
sometimes when it would come back in, the sound effect would be almost a hot second delay to it, too.
Yeah.
That would really throw... It was really apparent at the very beginning of the film. I don't know. It was not...
I don't know what was going on there, but it wasn't... That part... Almost Alone made it so thrown off for me that I was like, I'm not loving this. But I guess I say this, like, of all the ones that we've been to, if you have the Batman 89 come to town, I don't know, just watch it at home.
You don't think they'll fix that?
No, I don't think it's a problem that needs to be fixed. I think it's something to do with the mix. Because obviously, you know, the tour company that puts this on, and they'll use, like, your local orchestra. It's not like they're touring in the actual orchestra.
But the guys work in the next booth behind us.
It's like a tour that's going around. And when it's here, it's the Orlando Philharmonic plays. And obviously, they have to have a mix of the movie that doesn't include the music. Like, so they're playing a mix that's the dialogue and the sound effects, but the music's gone. And I don't know if it's maybe a case of, this is a, I'm going to quotes here, an older movie, you know, it's 35 years old. I mean, it was made when, I'm not saying mixing was like a new art form or anything back then. It's not that old, but it's been a while. And maybe the stems they got a hold of to cut the music out, they had to take some sound effects with it or something. I don't know.
I guess.
Like, I get the impression it's something like that, but I don't think there was like a technical problem happening.
No, it wasn't a technical. You could tell it wasn't a technical issue. It was definitely the actual mix itself that was given to them to use.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah. It was weird.
And it was kind of a downer because, like, so our Performing Arts Center has two main rooms. There's the Walt Disney Theater. That's the big, like, the big house, basically. That's where we go to see our Broadway Across America shows. That's where we've seen extended comedians in. It's like
Chris Rock in there.
Yeah, we saw Chris Rock there. It's the big room. That's the big show, you know, is that room. And the theater next to it is called Steinmetz Hall. And that is the big, like, symphony.
It's the concert hall.
It's the concert hall. It's, you know, we're going to see your opera singers and whatnot. And I was looking forward to this because in the past, because Steinmetz Hall hadn't been opened, we'd seen the Harry Potters in the larger Walt Disney Hall. And if anything, the downside of that is that the screen is small in this huge, huge room. And in Steinmetz, the room is smaller. And the acoustics are absolutely phenomenal, especially for an orchestra. And so I was like, this is going to sound amazing. And then we get there and the screen's really big. And I'm like, hot diggity damn, this is going to be awesome. And then this mix comes in and I'm like, wow, this is really taking away from the awesomeness of this room.
Right.
It's like, this is really killing this. It was kind of a downer.
Overall, we had a great time.
Yep. Overall, it was a great evening, though.
But I don't know. I just had to mention that it kind of bummed me out. That
I'd save your money.
I would save your money. Because
for that it's one, funny, at least. For that one.
You know, they don't. I've never seen whoever tours for the Harry Potter stuff. I think it's a different company.
I think it's
and
different.
This one, like, they even kind of had an ad.
Like
and,
a promo.
Like a promo before the whole concert started of, like, other tours. And one of them was for The Batman, the most recent Batman film.
The Batman.
And I think we were all reacted like, oh, that'd be awesome. Even though part of me, and I love that score, but there is a part of me, the more I've thought about it, I'm like, is that a score, though, I need to hear performed live? Like, it's great, but it's not the kind of score that I don't know that I need to hear a live orchestra perform. But anyway, now that we've seen this Batman 89 production, where I'm like, if the Batman comes to town, I think I'm good.
and no offense to our Philharmonic. We have a good Philharmonic, but we're no, you know, Cleveland. We're no
Chicago,
Philadelphia or Chicago. Like, we're not at that elite level of American, Philharmonics. Mm-hmm. Ours is good. And so part of me almost doesn't want to see the Batman with ours because I'm like,
oh man.
they're good, but maybe I'd want to see it somewhere else.
Okay. Wow.
We've been seasoned members of our Philharmonic before. Like, we support our local arts. I mean, our conductor, I see him in town. I've literally run into our conductor in Orlando running errands. It's a cool thing, you know? It's nice to have art.
But yeah, we've been to the Harry Potter ones, like we said, and those have been great.
Those have been great.
And it's a fun atmosphere. People cosplay. It's a thing.
Like, apparently the Fellowship of the Rings had a lot of hobbits.
Yeah, I heard there were. Oh, we didn't go to that one.
I heard there were a friend lot of
ours
hobbits
went
there.
And mentioned there was a lot of costumes, a lot of hobbit feet.
Yeah.
But Batman, wasn't as much, and I think mainly because you can't wear masks, so, I mean, that kills any cosplay of your main character, and I think the list also said no face makeup, well,
kind of kills that one,
there wasn't
too.
Really many people in, like, Batman costumes. I saw, like, a Batman tux or somebody was wearing. I think that was it.
There were a lot of people wearing the Batman shirt. I did see one guy with the black baseball hat. The thug black baseball hat wear.
The goons.
Black or purple. The goons hat. Yeah.
Anyway. I think that's it. Bobby, you said you didn't have anything else? You good?
No. Uh-uh.
Oh, we're going to go see Dune 2 for the second time.
Finally, going to see Dune 2 for the second time on Wednesday.
IMAX.
In IMAX.
Well, our IMAX.
It's a real IMAX, at least.
It is.
Not film.
No.
But I mean, and you said you saw the 70mm print, right, Bobby?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And I assume it was great.
Yeah, it was. But I don't know how much of it is, because I definitely felt like there was a lot of times where it was cut off. Like, it didn't take up the entire, 3 feet or whatever the actual 70mm IMAX is or whatever.
Well,
so.
Oh, go ahead.
Well. Yeah, so it's a 70mm print, right? But the IMAX that is like those big ones, the ones that's like 3 feet, or not 3 feet, three stories. I think it's like that one doesn't fit. It doesn't fit all of that. But I think if I had watched it on one of the LIMAX, maybe it probably takes up that entire screen,
right?
But I don't know.
I haven't seen
it on that format yet.
Well, I mean, the other thing is too, for me, I mean, every time that you get one of these movie releases, usually a Christopher Nolan film that has like a 70mm run, we never get to see it because like the closest theater around is like in Fort Lauderdale, I think, that, you know, has a 70mm projector. But in this case, so it's not like I've ever gone out of my way to see any of them, really. But in this case, I guess I wasn't even as tempted to do that kind of thing because, I mean, this Dune wasn't filmed on film. It was filmed digitally.
Yeah.
And I guess they did a conversion for the 70 millimeter print, which, again, I'm sure looks great. But I'm like, well, it wasn't shot on film. I think I'm good with just seeing it on digital IMAX.
I think the one that we came closest to doing that for was Oppenheimer.
Right. And I think when Interstellar came out, I remember really being like, man, I want to go see this in 70 millimeters so bad. But
yeah. Because I saw it digital and it looked great. And I didn't even know there was a film version of Dune 2, but yeah,
there are some theaters that there's only like a handful in the U.S. It's really not much at all.
I think 12?
Mm-hmm. It's like 12 in the world or something that have all the 70 millimeter print. But you've got like 4 or 5 in Southern California,
like, right? But then Southern California has most of them.
There's a few.
Yeah. But yeah, we're seeing it in a 70 millimeter screen. This is our long way of getting around to, we're seeing it in 70 millimeter. It's a real 70 millimeter screen, not 70 millimeter IMAX screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So we'll finally see it a second time on Wednesday.
Nice. Is that the first movie you've seen this year?
No, it's not. We saw Bob Marley, One Love.
Ah, okay. Okay.
We did see that. I guess that's the first movie I saw this year.
Yeah.
We're both hesitating because I can tell what we're both thinking. Like, is that it? Is that the first movie we saw?
Yeah, I can hear Michelle's wheels like grinding.
She's doing some searching in her app right now to look at her history to see, are we forgetting something?
Well, I hadn't heard you talk about anything. That's why I thought maybe this was the first thing, but I do remember One you love. Saying you were gonna watch.
And I mean, we needed to go, but since we're bringing it up real quick, I'll go ahead and say Bob Marley, One Love, I was looking forward to as a Bob Marley fan. I was going into it with a bit of skepticism of like, I don't expect this to be a great biopic. And as everyone knows, if you know me and know this show, I'm not a big biopic person. Like, I think they're pretty formulaic a lot of times, even though in recent years they've all tried to go away from the whole, like, let's go from birth to death or, usually now biopics seem to focus on a period of time, important period of time in the character's life or something. And then framed in a way that still covers things from throughout their life. And this movie is similar to that. But overall, I enjoyed it. I think there's a reason it came out in February. It's not like it was trying to be award season material. But I thought the performances were fantastic. The actor's name, who I feel terrible that we cannot seem to remember.
I can't quite remember, but isn't it something like Reggae Jean Page or something? Reggae.
Yeah, I don't know.
Jean. I'm gonna look it up.
Kingsley Benadire.
Oh.
Oh gosh, who was I thinking of?
Who were you thinking of?
I'm gonna have to look up who I thought of.
But the performances were great. Overall, I enjoyed it. I also wasn't going into it thinking it was gonna be amazing. So since we brought it up, I felt like mentioning it.
I would have to say I enjoyed it. It's definitely, I mean, I don't really even say I have expectations. I'm a Bob Marley fan as well. I enjoyed it. I think the performances were what stood out in that film. I think the rest of it, you could take it or leave it, kind of. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. And it's kind of where I left with that one.
I know there's been a lot of complaints that it's really does feel like a family kind of polished product about Bob Marley, since it's produced by the family and everything. And it is, but I'm actually okay with it. It's fine. Like,
I think
I'm not saying I wouldn't be interested in seeing a grittier like movie about Bob Marley that kind of goes into subjects maybe people don't want to hear or whatever. I don't know, but
I think for the basic American audience, some of his lifestyle choices, I don't think people would understand or want to see that on film, really. I don't think that that would be portrayed. I don't think that that would convey well. I don't think that they would sit through it and kind of go, oh, okay. Whereas if you know about Bob Marley, you know about his life choices and the way he lived his life. And anyways, I think it was actually a wiser way to go with the family going, let's just keep it on the, we'll call it the quote unquote sunnier side of Bob and his choices.
Right.
So I was okay with that. But for biopics, like, I love biopics. For me, it was like, it was okay.
If anything, this was one I found myself, as someone who likes Bob Marley and would love to see more, going, I like that biopics have kind of shifted away from the real main formula they were for so long. But at the same time, I wish this one had covered more ground.
This one could have benefited from it, actually. Having a little bit more of his youth and history, I think it would have... I would agree. I think it would have benefited more.
Sorry, Bobby. You were going to ask something or say something?
No, I was just going to say... So I had to look it up. And the guy I'm thinking of is the guy from Bridgerton.
Oh,
and he, yeah. Okay. And I realized he's a different guy than this guy, which makes me feel like a horrible human being.
I'm looking at the two of them side by side, I'm like, now I know why I confused the two of them so much. They have a similar sort of look to,
like, their jawline is extremely similar.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not crazy.
Very much.
But anyways, they are two different good actors that I do enjoy, and I feel bad for also confusing them earlier in the show. Oh. Anyways.
Nah, see, I have to look up this guy. But anyway, please. Anything else before we go? With that, we would love to hear from everyone listening. You can email us at feedback@flickereffect.com. You can reach out to us on Instagram and Twitter @flicker_effect. We would love to hear from you. With that, I'm Dave Lott.
I'm Bobby Jackson.
And I'm Michelle Hillard.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.